Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 3rd of May, Anno Domini 2014, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues, here comes the news. Microsoft on Thursday announced it is releasing an emergency patch for Internet Explorer to fix a zero-day flaw spotted in the wild. The security hole was found in IE6 through IE11, and the company says its update is fully tested and ready for a release for all affected versions of the browser. While this normally means all supported versions, this time is different. Microsoft is issuing a security update for Windows XP users as well, despite the fact that Windows XP is no longer supported by the company. Here is Microsoft's reasoning for the decision. Even though Windows XP is no longer supported by Microsoft and is past the time we normally provide security updates, we've decided to provide an update for all versions of Windows XP, including embedded, today. We made this exception based on the proximity at the end of support for Windows XP. The reality is there have been a very small number of attacks based on this particular vulnerability, and concerns were, frankly, overblown. Unfortunately, this is a sign of the times, and this is not to say we don't take these reports seriously. We absolutely do. This is a poor move on Microsoft. What?
I say, when did Richard Nixon start working for Microsoft?
It's amazing, isn't
yeah.
it? From the grave and everything. This is a poor move on Microsoft's part. Just because the flaw was discovered soon after support ended doesn't mean the company should backtrack on its stance. The company should be encouraging users to get off that ancient operating system, which still has over 26% market share, not giving them a reason to stay on it. Microsoft goes on to say, just because this update is out now, doesn't mean you should stop thinking about getting off Windows XP and moving to a newer version of Windows and the latest version of Internet Explorer. Unfortunately, actions speak louder than words. Regardless of what version of IE you have on your system, you should update. Most Windows users have automatic update enabled, and will get the patch from there if you prefer manual updates. This is not one that you should put off, seriously. The release is an out-of-band fix, meaning the flaw is severe enough that the company didn't feel comfortable waiting any longer to address the vulnerability. Normally, on the first Tuesday of every month, they talk about what they're going to bring out next week. And then on the second Tuesday of every month, they actually put out fixes. This one came out in the middle of the last week of the month. So you can tell it's important. The original security advisory issued on April 26th notes that FireEye first found the security hole. The security firm says that the time that the exploit was targeting IE9 through IE11, but the weakness also was present in all earlier versions as far back as IE6. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft updated both IE and XP? And your choices are, yay, I get to keep XP. So, why did I upgrade to 8.1? Meh. And you Windows people amuse me. So far, we've got 32 votes, and yay, I knew this about you people. Yay, I get to keep XP is the number one vote.
Of course, everyone who unplugged XP from the internet, like we recommended, isn't going to get the update.
That's right.
Because they're unplugged.
That's right. And, of course, you should check out the poll. If you go down to the right-hand column, go down to Fascinating Stuff, click on the forums. Well, oddly, my middle... That's weird. My middle click isn't working well. If you go down to the forums, the second set of forums is the poll discussion. And if you go down there, you will see forum 26... where'd it go? Oh, there you go. 3 May 14, are you still using XP... How about IE? And you can leave your painful
paean of praise to Windows XP there. But while you're doing that, don't forget to continue to listen to us. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I do think it was a mistake. I get that you need to patch IE, and you really should be patching every version, but patching XP, I think, is a mistake. It's like the walking OS. It's the OS that wouldn't die.
And now, next month, when another vulnerability is found, will they patch that, too?
Exactly.
Although, I did kind of expect them to do, you know, if a severe enough flaw was found, that they would still patch it.
Right. All right, to the phones. Robin, our first caller is Vic, all the way from Dayton, Ohio. Welcome, Dick. What's up?
Hi there. I called you last week and told you about ToolWiz and Time Freeze.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I actually got a call about that, and I looked at the page that they have now, and I realized that I had used, and it's marked on the page, the old version. Some people are having troubles with it. And the new version has a lot more stuff on it, which really is unnecessary.
Ah.
So if you look down the page, you'll see, select, how would you like our old version, which is a lot simpler and easier to use.
Oh,
yeah, a lot of companies, when they come up with a new version of something, they add new features, and sometimes they make it more complex, and people don't like that.
And you had also asked me what other programs were like this. Well, the one I forgot to tell you about, and I couldn't think of it at the time, I wrote it down this time, was Sandboxy. You might have heard about that.
Sandboxy?
Yeah, Sandboxie. And they have a free and a paid-for version. And it's more granular, and you can do more stuff with it and stuff of that nature.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Oh, Sandbox IE. I get it.
Yes.
I get it. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, sandboxing, for those of you who don't know, basically says that when you run an application, it is kind of insulated from the rest of the operating system. The main reason people do that is because that means if something kills that program or it gets caught in a loop or some whatever sort of thing, that it doesn't have any effect on any of the other programs or the operating system itself. When you're sandboxing a browser, it means that it's less likely, not impossible, but less likely that it will infect the machine if something bad happens. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, he did well.
Thank you.
That's exactly what it does.
Thank you, yeah.
Okay, and let's see. And there are other ones too, but Sandboxy is probably the most popular. Be cautious, there's a paid version and there's a free version.
Of course there is.
And, well, they got to make money.
Exactly. And I always tell people, if you can, please pay for it because it encourages them to keep up the good software.
Yeah. Also, you asked how I tested it and make sure it worked.
Yeah.
And what I had done, I had downloaded a program which I know had included Conduit. Now, I don't know if you know what Conduit is.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it.
Yep. I hear a sense of response there. Well, basically, it affects your browsers, it changes your home page, and it's really difficult to get rid of.
It's a real pain in the neck.
On my system that I did, which was a throwaway system, so I wasn't too worried about it, I had three browsers. I had Firefox, Internet Explorer, and also I had Google Chrome. Now, it was positive it would work with everything, but I wasn't too sure about Chrome. The reason being is Chrome is somewhat cloud-based with its settings.
Right.
And I was just kind of curious, well, would it work? Well, it did.
Nice.
So I put on Conduit, and it was in its full glory, had captured everything, home pages, search, everything else, and rebooted, and it was gone from everything. All browsers were clean.
Nice.
Very, very nice.
So that's how I tested it.
Good to hear. Thank you.
All right. And one other thing. Have you ever heard about God mode?
God mode?
Yeah.
In games, I have, certainly.
All right. Here's an interesting little thing you can try. Google God Mode, it's one of the places that has it, is bleepingcomputer.com. And it's sort of like an Easter egg. So you take a look at it, and then you tell the folks about it.
All right, we will. Thanks.
All right. I'll see you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, a lot of games have something they call God Mode, which you can do anything. You get all the weapons, all the ammo.
Unlimited
health.
Yeah, everything. Turns you into that you can never be killed. And
yep.
Right.
Walk through walls or whatever.
We talk about that a little bit in Unix-based systems like Linux and Mac, where you have the root user, and root is God and can do anything it wants, including delete itself.
Right. I will look into this. I do know about this because you create a folder, you give it a special name, and you can do certain things, and all of them are things that you, the listener, should not do unless you're willing to completely destroy your Windows system.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start with that, because if you do something. Once you're in God mode, they're not kidding. You can destroy your system with a keystroke. So unless you actually know what you're doing.
RM space minus RF?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Everyone open a terminal window.
RM space slash
minus
space
R.
Minus RF.
Yeah. Well, it's just like we have never on the station or, in all the other places we were, ever tell folks how to edit the registry.
Right.
Because that is one place, if you don't know what you are doing in there, you don't go in there.
Right. So,
it is
Vic,
too dangerous.
Much as we love to hear from you, don't tell people about God.
Yeah, really. Well, yeah, and if you want to wind up taking your computer to your shop and having it redone.
Well, exactly.
Be prepared for that.
Exactly. But you can do some amazing little tweaks and things to Windows, but it really, really is dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. So please, if you're going to do anything with God mode, don't call us and complain about it, because we don't recommend it, and we can't help you once you've destroyed your machine.
Oh, I had another customer drop off a machine, got it cleaned up, took it home a couple days later.
Yeah.
Call me back. Things just sitting there constantly looking like it wants to do something. I said, "Did you were you back on the internet?" Yeah, I was trying to do what I was doing before.
Yeah.
I said, "Guess what? You're probably reinfected because you went to that same site again and they had BitTorrent back on." And I said, "Sorry, you put that junk on there and you're going to get reinfected."
There are many legitimate uses for BitTorrent, but it's also one of the most popular ways to steal music and movies on the internet.
Yeah, and to wind up, ruining, infecting your machine, because a lot of that stuff you think, it didn't download correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, what it wanted to download, it got downloaded, and now your machine is infected. Thank you very much.
And that wasn't a copy of the new Avengers movie. That was a virus.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And
then
the other kicker is he goes, "Well, I was only on for a couple of minutes." I says, "If you're on more than 10 seconds.
Force 2 seconds.
More than 10 seconds. That's it. It's enough time to go to that site, it get there, and down, you're on. Forget it. You're hosed."
Yep. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We are going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and for no discernible reason we can figure out, you're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Here's an interesting little tidbit. This is a leak, so take it with a grain of salt. Apple's existing EarPods will be replaced with versions that can sense heart rate and blood pressure, according to a post on the anonymous app Secret. The headphones would also use Apple's iBeacon system to help locate them if lost, according to the author of the post, who claims to have been let go from the company, along with others, last week. Apple is also working on an iWatch wearable, the author suggested, but said that the name isn't final yet. That would put it in contention with Samsung, which has released both a smartwatch and a GearFit wristband that claims to measure heart rate in favor of a minimal product that could be used on millions of its existing products. The suggestion would also fit well with leaked suggestions that iOS 8, Apple's next version of its iPhone and iPad software, will incorporate a health book app. Those leaks, first published by 9to5 Mac in March, points to attempts by Apple to capitalize on the growing interest in tracking fitness. However, other research has also shown that people tend to discard separately bought fitness gadgets within a few months, suggesting that any successful wearable would have to have a dual function, one of which was not health or fitness related. Apple could have a potential market among its own users of at least 100 million devices, which could replace existing headphones with the newer ones. The nature of Secret means that it's impossible to trace the author of posts or verify their identity. But it has gained increasing credibility as a number of staff inside Silicon Valley companies have begun using it and leaking sometimes confidential information. They add that the phone stores the data in a similar way to thumbprint point data, fully encrypted and nothing identifiable, but nice to send to your doctor to keep track of at which point your blood pressure started rising, for example. The author also suggested that the headphones will be introduced when iOS 8, the next version of Apple's iPhone and iPad software, is released, which would probably be in September this year to maintain the company's cycle of updates to its iPhone line 2 and catch the Christmas selling period, the largest in the year. Asked why they had leaked details of Apple's forthcoming product, the sort of information the company always tries to keep secret up until the moment of an announcement, the post office said, "I have been manipulated. I'm not the only person who got sent home for good last week." Does this sound like a reasonable leak or a hoax? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Apple has been hiring a lot of people with medical backgrounds lately, and they've been buying companies with medical backgrounds. Most of the rumors are focusing on the iWatch. One of the features it could have on your wrist, it could measure pulse ox and heart rate and things like that. But it would be neat to add that feature to the earbuds too, because you stick them in your ear all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is an interesting point, which is that so many people don't use those things past the first couple months. You buy it, it gets thrown in a drawer, you never take it out again. But you always have your earbuds with you, and you always have, you know, so you would always be tracking yourself, because most people keep them in pretty regularly.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting way to do it. And it makes sense that Apple would figure out a dual-purpose way. Since you always have your earbuds in anyway, why not use them?
Yep. Yeah, they've hired several people with different medical backgrounds, different companies in the medical field. So it's that lends credibility to the rumor.
Yeah, exactly. And like we said, that app, which is called Secret, has been fair. I mean, obviously, since everything is anonymous and anybody can post, there's been a significant amount of junk in there, but there's been enough that's been true. And when you can corroborate it based on other things like, yes, Apple is hiring medical people and biomedical companies,
then it
gains a certain amount of credence. So that's an interesting little tidbit. I don't know if there's anything similar in the Android market. It would have to be a company that puts out an app.
Yeah, that'd be cool. But, you know, I just sit here and think and go back to the days of when I was a kid, Dick Tracy and his watch.
Sure.
Yep.
The two-way wrist radio.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the two-way wrist TV.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool. You know what I want? I want those air cars they had. It was a cylinder that you stood in and had a rail around it to keep holding you upright, and it just took off and flew away. And that, now that, there's the
sort of
thing
like
I
a Segway.
Next.
Yeah, exactly. A segue for the air.
Yeah.
That's what I want. That's what I want next. Get to work on that, you people.
There have been a few of them.
Get on it.
The first one was the Hiller VZ-1. The U.S. Army was working on.
And it looks similar,
in,
too, the 1957 thing. Yeah.
That's when did Tracy come out?
Oh, probably after that. I'm sure that he saw that. Chester Gould saw that and decided to do it, but I don't care. It was the cool. I remember seeing that in Sunday paper and just staring at that picture and thinking, that's what I want. That right there is what I want.
Yeah.
How cool was that?
Well, it's just like they used to laugh at what was Buck Rogers.
Yep.
And that one part where he shoots a cannon off and it goes to the moon. You see the face of the moon and the projectile sticks in the side of the moon.
One of the very first.
That was long before.
Right. Well, that was one of the very first movies.
Yep.
And it happened to be in science fiction movie. There's a series on PBS called Pioneers of Television.
Yep.
And they did one on science fiction.
No, Pioneers of Science Fiction.
Well, there's two of them then. No, the one on PBS is Pioneers of Television. And they did one on science fiction. And then there's one on one of the...
BBC America.
Is it BBC America?
History Channel.
History Channel, about pioneers of science fiction.
Right.
No, real history of science fiction. They got Rutger Hauer doing his famous line from Blade Runner.
Right.
Rutger Hauer got old.
Yeah, so did everybody in those things.
Unfortunately, we all are.
Yeah. Did you see the picture of the cast for the next Star Wars film?
Yeah.
Half of them are my age or older. What the hell are they doing in movies?
Yeah.
Go home and sit on your porch.
Making money.
Yeah, exactly.
They even move still.
Well, Andy Serkis was in the picture, who is probably most well known for playing Gollum in Lord of the Rings and Planet of the Apes, Caesar. And everyone's wondering if he's going to be an animated character or if he's going to be himself.
My only hope is they do not have Jar Jar Binks. That's the only thing I really care about.
Well, it's what's interesting is tomorrow is Star Wars Day. You know, May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you.
And Big Bang Theory this week did a special episode about Star Wars, and the guys were all getting together to watch Star Wars. And you have to watch episodes 1 through 6, you know, in numerical order. Not release date.
So you go 4, 5, 6, then 1, 2, 3.
No, well 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to get the story
is
right.
The numerical order.
Order.
Release order is 4, 5, 6, yeah. 1, 2, 3. Right.
But one of the guys had said, "How did it work? You watch 4 and 5, and then you watch 2 and 3 as a flashback, and then you watch 6 to tie it all together,
right?
And then you can skip 1 and
forever.
And no Jar Jar. But then Sheldon
it's
said, well, no, you can't do that because that episode 1 is the rise of Palpatine." To become the chancellor, which then becomes the emperor. So you have to watch 1 for that.
Yep.
Well, I got the whole books, CD.
Yep.
Set of it, 1 through 6.
So, 1 through 6 is about, 15 hours straight, not counting potty breaks.
Thank heaven you can pause it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're doing 7, 8, and 9.
Yeah.
That might be cool with the sound bar.
There you go. I will tell you. That the guy I knew was in the business of installing home theaters, and he had one in his basement.
Mm.
And in those days, it was 12-inch Laserdisc platters, so this is how long ago it was. And he had this giant screen, 108 inches, I think it was. And he sits me down in the exact center of the room, and there's speakers everywhere. And he puts on Star Wars, and when that ship comes over the back of your head and that rumbling happens, I could feel it in my chest. It gave me a whole new... I mean, I saw it in the movies, and I was one of those millions of people who ducked when that thing came over. Oh, yes! They actually have films of people watching for the first time ever, and the whole audience does this when it comes over your head. Absolutely. They all duck.
Oh.
And I ducked all over again because it was so... I could feel it in my chest.
I've got a client, and he was a doctor. And you go down to his basement, and he actually has a theater.
Yeah.
Where he's got, 3 rows of theater seats with the speakers in there. He's got the popcorn machine and all that. Well, he put down a movie. I think it was Top Gun.
Uh-huh.
And the jets and that coming over that. It's like, whoa! The sound, because the bass and everything else, because it's totally surround sound. Like you say, again, it was on one of these big projection screens and that. This had to be about 10 years ago.
Ever been to the IMAX theater when early enough when they do the introducing the theater thing? where they talk about the 40 speakers everywhere and ups and backs.
Oh,
and
yeah, they're showing.
And on the bass. And they turn the light on behind the screen.
So you can see it.
Well, and one of the things that you don't realize is that the movie screen is transparent. It's filled with millions of little tiny holes because the bass is behind the screen.
The bass says.
A wall, right.
Yeah.
And so the sound has to come through the screen to look like it's coming from the screen.
Yeah.
And so the real high-end home theater systems use that audio, an audio transparent screen.
Well, it's like that
the
mesh.
The dots are too small for light to get through, but sound can get through.
Yeah.
Well, it's like that mesh that I had on the back of my HHR there. Sitting in the car, I could see fine out the back window.
Yeah.
You looking at it, all you could see was the thing for sound bites.
And this has been a technology for decades. For centuries, for theater, called a scrim.
Yeah.
And it looks like a forest scene. Mm-hmm. And then they light up the people behind it, mm-hmm. the forest scene disappears and you see them. So it's a technology that's been around forever. And Joe Phillips over in the Hangout is saying, imagine if you were displayed on an Oculus Rift. Oculus Rift is those glasses that you put on, it's 3D glasses.
Oh, yeah.
You would see it that way, but you would still need the subwoofers mm-hmm. out in the real world to give you that sound.
Oh, the effect. Of the sound. Yeah, the pounding on your chest.
Yeah.
That wakes you up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, it's and that's one reason that I still like going to theaters to see movies, because you just, the experience on the big screen with the big speakers, with the et cetera, mm-hmm. is way better than watching it. I don't care how big your home screen is. However, I just don't like most of the people who are in theaters with me because they're talking on the phone and they're texting each other and all that stuff. So I tend to go to the movies like at 11 o'clock in the morning when nobody else is there.
The early ones, yeah.
Problem is I got to start taking earplugs with me now. So if it's too loud.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what was it? Not last week. The week before, I went to a concert at Robert Wesley's.
Sure. A little loud, was it?
Yeah, I went to see the Newsboys, and in that small gym with the speaker system they had, I was a couple days going, huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
I took my daughter to a concert many, many years ago. It was at RIT in the gym, and it was Cobra Starship and Fall Out Boy and all these other bands. And in there, it was so loud. And that's a huge auditorium. It was so loud, I had to leave the place. You know, of course, mm-hmm. my daughter and her friends are up at the front there. And I was there at her age. I stood right by the speakers and danced the night away.
Been there, done that.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm paying.
That's why we're deaf now.
Huh?
Well, yeah.
What?
Let me tell you where the loudest speakers I ever heard were. Woodstock. Those speakers were a story tall because they had to reach the whole place.
Yep.
And I couldn't get close to them. I couldn't do it.
I couldn't understand the folks that were down there by the stages and in the pits.
Even the sound pressure.
Exactly. Oh. I couldn't.
They would lift you. That was no lie. You would be physically lifted from the sound of those.
Yep.
I remember that to this day.
Yep.
Then, of course, there was Disaster Area, the Plutonium rock band, generally regarded as the loudest rock band in the galaxy.
Good to know.
The best place to listen to it was on another planet.
Yeah.
A neighboring planet. Large concrete bunkers. 37. Yeah. So the band is 37 miles from the stage.
My hearing is going today. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Sound Bites, no matter what planet you're on the member-supported, truly and solely member-supported, Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Poor, poor Sony. Sony, and you know, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I beg your pardon. Sony is warning shareholders to expect poor financial results
For its fiscal year ending March 31st, the electronics giant previously expected to pull in an operating income of $782 million over the fiscal year. But on Thursday, they adjusted that figure down to just $254 million, from $782 to $254. The sharp reduction, the new operating income estimates, are 68% down from their February forecast, can be attributed to a pair of somewhat unexpected results. Roughly $293 million of the drop is due to additional expenses from Sony's exit from the PC business. The company announced it's to sell its PC division to a Japanese investment fund earlier this year. The second charge is due to what Sony calls demand for physical media contracting faster than anticipated, especially in Europe. What they mean is that Blu-ray sales are dying. Because of this, Sony says it doesn't believe the business will generate sufficient cash flow to in the future to recover the carrying amount of long-lived assets. It anticipates an impairment charge in these assets and a second charge in the overall value of its disc manufacturing business, which will amount to $245 million. Blu-ray was officially introduced in 2006, backed by Sony and other manufacturers, and briefly battled against its competing next-generation format, HD DVD. I remember those wars. Buoyed by widespread adoption thanks to integration of with the PlayStation 3, the popularity of Sony's format of choice saw HD DVDs die without a trace. Winning this battle required heavy investment from Sony, an investment that it expected to recoup with years of strong sales. Instead of the market moving from DVD to Blu-ray, consumers began to embrace downloads from Apple's iTunes service and streaming from sites like Netflix and Hulu. Although Blu-ray is integrated with some Windows laptops, it was never offered by Apple. Steve Jobs famously called the format a bag of hurt. With the rise of movies streaming and download, Sony is now accepting that its disc business is not worth as much as hoped. Sony will give a full rundown of its financial performance over the past year in a couple of weeks. Its revenues from operations is likely to actually be higher than originally expected. The new forecast adds some $685 million to the previous figure, but the company expects still to book a net loss for the year. So, do you use Blu-ray? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Bob did from Rush, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's up?
Oh, hi. I'm trying to get you on the internet, and I can't.
You mean the stream?
Yes, the stream is not working.
I'm not sure what the story is there, and I see that it's back up now. Oh, it appears to be back up now. People are getting in, so try it again.
Oh, are they? Okay. Yeah, because I tried to get the polka guys on, and yeah. I couldn't get them this morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's some new software that they installed this week. As far as I know, it's been okay. I mean, it shows that, you know, everything's going out over the air, but I say the counter off. So
it shows that, you know, everything's going out. Yeah, over and the air. And a couple people in the hangout are saying they can hear it.
I got to it, but I'm inside the building. That may not count.
Yeah, right. Well, a couple of guys in the hangout are saying that they've got it too. So it's working there. And of course, the hangout does not appear again this week to be picking up the phone callers. I don't know what the issue is there. It worked last week.
So yeah, last week the polka guys cut out. Okay, the stream didn't work.
Yeah.
All right, and you know, today the polka guys, you know, weren't on there. You know, it's kind of, the stream is important for me because you know, the radio on-air reception is awful here. Yeah. I'm calling from Rush.
You can also go to Nick's channel on YouTube and watch the video there, or you can go to our Ustream channel and watch the audio and video there.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
But the YouTube apparently is not working because the stream is working, but the I don't believe you can hear the caller. If you just do the YouTube.
On the YouTube stream. So the Ustream should have both.
Ustream would have both.
Yeah.
And there are several people watching there, too.
I'm not sure what's going on. It worked last week with exactly this cord, so I don't know what the deal is. I'll figure it out.
Okay. Well, just wanted to report that to you guys.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah, it's...
I've got this lovely new Chromebook, and it does everything beautifully well, but it's got a different connector for audio.
Yeah,
and so
this is the same problem my laptop has. It's only got an out, and yours you think it's an in and an out, but how does it know which you're doing?
Well, and you need the
right connector.
The four connections.
So I solved it by getting a USB to audio adapter.
Yeah, three black bands, and that does it. And I may have to do that, but I think the problem is that it's two band at the other end and three band at this end, and not connecting correctly. I'm not sure how to fix that in any way, but I may end up doing what you did and get an audio to USB connector.
Yeah,
see if that does it. Who knows? But yeah, it's an interesting conundrum today. We're working on it. So give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415.
I was just talking to some folks about the Chromebook.
Yeah.
Because, matter of fact, one guy wanted to get a computer for his wife, wanted something simple. Is there other computer he was having issues with? And I says, well, you know, if all she's going to do is the internet, you know, she can still get to everything, you know, to surf the internet, do letters and all that stuff. Chromebook. $200-$300. You got a great machine. It's thin. The battery life is fantastic on it. And I think you'd be very pleased with it. So, yeah, he was going to, last I knew, that was on Thursday, go check it out and have his wife look at it too, because he goes, well, where do I go? Just go Google yeah. Chromebook. Yeah. And take a look at it. They are pretty slick. And like I say, you're not investing a lot of money for the simple use.
Yeah, I use it for almost everything. And I didn't throw away my desktop. I've still got a lovely desktop. But when I'm out doing stuff or whatever, or I'm working at my desk and I want to have Hangouts,
mm-hmm.
helpouts open so that people can call me for help. I leave that open on the side with an earbud in, listening, waiting for someone to come in.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, I take it with me everywhere. It's light and comfortable, like you said. I can do 99% of what I want to do anyway. And particularly when I'm, you know, out and about, I'm not doing a lot of stuff. You know, I can even do coding with this. So that works out nicely. There are a couple of coding editors available for it. It works mostly offline. A lot of the stuff works offline. Obviously, email doesn't work offline. You got to have a network connection to get your email.
Well, in the olden days, you would dial into the network, download all your mail, and then hang up, and then spend an hour or so replying to the messages and queuing them up in the outbox. You know, nowadays, you hardly ever see your outbox because you hit send and it's gone.
Yeah, really. I remember those days, though.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I'm not entirely sure what just happened there.
Undo, undo, undo.
That's exactly what I did.
Oops.
And now I'll do a quick redo and see what happens. Listen, we'll go back to the phones. Our next caller is Anne from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Anne.
Hello. I've got email issues, or at least I think maybe I do. I'm moving from XP to Windows 8, which means I haven't got Outlook anymore. My issues are also maybe compounded by Internet Explorer's problems. I downloaded a Chrome browser, or at least I thought that was what I was doing, and it made me sign up for Gmail as well. It then wouldn't take all of my passwords, and when I finally got that sorted out,
Yes?
Yes, I'm trying to think what came next.
Well, you need to have a mail reader program for Windows, and Microsoft has one called Mail, annoyingly enough. Of course, Apple's is also called Mail.
Right.
Or you can use a program called Thunderbird to read your mail. Or a lot of places also just use the web page to read mail.
Okay. Time Warner offers the ability to have a webmail address?
Yeah,
general?
Time Warner's webmail is horrible. It's very slow and very clunky. And
is it supposed to be a secure site because the HTTPS, I mean, there isn't any S at the end of it.
Right.
Yeah,
it
mail
is not secure.
Mail is not secure in general.
Okay. After I got the Chrome downloaded, I started going through emails, and a site that, I mean, an email address from someone I know had a link on it, which I hit, and then it came up with a malicious website.
Because people you know can be infected by viruses and be sending you bad links.
Okay, well, since my email is no longer on my own machine where it's covered by security software, how do I know if I've got a problem or not?
Well, yeah, it depends on where you're getting your email from. Places like Google will scan the email for you. Depending on what program you're using for antivirus, it may have an option to scan email as it comes into your machine.
But in this case, because you clicked the link and opened a web page, it's no longer email. It's a web page. And so you need the antivirus on your computer to stop that coming in.
Well, I ran a full scan after I did this, and it came up empty, but I wasn't quite sure what to do next. What about Outlook.com?
That's Microsoft's webmail service. And again, you can use an email client like Thunderbird, or you can use the web page, Outlook.com. Some people like to read their email on a web page. Some people like to condense it all into a single mail program. So if you have an Outlook.com address and a Gmail address and a Yahoo address and a Time Warner address, you can read all the mail from all your different services in one program like Thunderbird.
Right.
And you don't have to log into each website separately.
Now, yeah, okay. What about things like group mail addresses? Do all of these programs have ones where you can set up?
They all have an address book
and group addresses. Yeah.
Now, Windows 8 does have a mail program. It's called Mail.
Yeah, but I don't think it's got group addresses and a lot of other things that I'm used to in Outlook. I'm
because the Mail app just does mail. There's another app for contacts, and the contacts app does your addresses and your groups.
Right. So when you type in an address, it looks in your address book. So if you have the group in the contacts area, it'll pull that out.
So you set up your group in the contacts as a surrogate for an address book, and then you do group mail addressing the way you would ordinarily in Outlook?
Right. Yeah, the mail program talks to the contacts program to find your email addresses.
Okay. Does Kaspersky Internet Security scan incoming emails or...
I don't know if the free one does, honestly. I'm looking that up right now. Kaspersky does have a Windows 8.1, does support Windows 8.1. So I'm not sure if the free version...
I don't have the free version.
Oh, so you should... No, you should
There may be a setting to tell it to do that. It may not be on by default.
Right, I would look at the various settings that are built into Kaspersky in the setup of Kaspersky itself.
What should I be looking for?
Steve will post a link to it on our website. So if you go to soundbites.org and that's bites with a Y, you'll find a link to setting up Kaspersky on Windows 8.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Bye. Thank you. We are going to take a slightly longer hiatus for ourselves here. Just a few minutes, plenty of time for you to go grab a sandwich. Bring us one while you're at it, will you? We'll be back in a few minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Open Computer Show. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve. I'm Steve Ray.
And 5 minutes after the hour.
Point that toward me.
Yeah, we are Soundbites. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Apple has launched a new program to help iPhone 5 owners affected by a fault that may render their sleep-wake button ineffective or unresponsive. The problem affects what Apple calls a small percentage of iPhone 5S. Oh, of iPhone 5s, sorry, made from March 2013 on, Apple says. And you can find out if yours qualifies and applies for the replacement hardware by inputting your iPhone serial number at the support site created by Apple specifically for this program, which Steve will have up as soon as I give him the URL. Apple asks that users check their device on the site if their sleep-wake button has stopped working completely or works inconsistently. If you qualify, you'll then be able to take your get your device repaired, either in person at an Apple Store authorized service provider, or by sending your iPhone 5 in for treatment via email, or via mail. Probably not by email. It's not Tron yet. They can't suck your phone into the computer and send it. If you opt for carry-in, you can also get an iPhone 5 loaner model, which Apple will supply in 16-gig variants only, for use while your own device is having its sleep-wake button replaced. If your phone isn't displaying the problem now, don't worry about it just yet. Apple's offer to replace broken sleep-wake buttons extends to 2 years beyond the first purchase date of the device. So in theory, you've still got at least another year for the issue to manifest to get it fixed for free. So is your sleep-wake button screwy? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. We're finding this hitting Apple now. It's been true for other vendors for a long time, and it's starting to hit Apple as profit margins get slimmer.
Yep.
People use less and less expensive components, not to say cheap components, in their systems. And at some point, you get the law of diminishing returns. There are enough problems that I think it's not worth it to save the 200th of a cent per device.
When you do 10 million of them a quarter. Thanks. That might add up.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that we see a lot of in the repair side of things is wash your hands now and then. Because the sleep-wake button, the usual problem is it will get stuck down or it won't push down. And oftentimes, just taking it apart and cleaning the gunk out of it fixes it. So wherever you put your finger, before you push it on that button, that could be an issue. But apparently, this is actually a mechanical problem. Well, and that actually is one of the weird things we've seen in these types of devices. There's an outer plastic shell with a plastic button, and you push the plastic button, and that plastic button pushes the actual contact on the inside, which then is the momentary switch. So if something gets caught in that gap between the outer button and the inner button, that can make it not work. Or if you push the button too many times, then the little spring holding, it's not a spring, it's just an arc of metal,
right,
holding that up wears out, and then it doesn't work anymore, and it either gets stuck down, so it's always closing the circuit, or it'll get stuck up, so it never closes the circuit. So it's weird. It'll break both ways.
Nice. Hopefully it'll break up so that it never, I'd rather have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not sleep. Now my son's iPod, he got an iPod Touch for Christmas and came to me, a couple of weeks ago and said the button is broken already.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing. His home button is broken down and won't let go. So we had to turn on, there's something called assistive touch on the iDevices. So if your buttons don't work, you can tap on the screen. It's designed for people with limited mobility. So if you can't push that little tiny button, there's a bigger button on screen. So we turn that on for him. So now I'm looking around the internet, and the usual solution is to use a little bit of isopropyl alcohol and clean the button out. Or we'll go through the warranty process and get it replaced. But
right.
Already?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Already?
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. It's Chris calling all the way from Hartford, Connecticut. How are things in Hartford, Chris?
Sunny.
Sunny, we hate you, just so you know.
How are you guys?
We're peachy, thanks. Not sunny.
Well, you were talking about Blu-ray earlier and
yeah.
its impending demise. I've still got, I don't know, it must be almost 100 DVDs. And, you know, I've also got a home theater PC.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get tired of sticking the physical DVDs in. You get tired of the previews and all the warnings and stuff. So I like transferring the DVDs to the home theater PC.
Yep.
And
right.
I've stayed away from Blu-ray because I just perceive that to be more difficult to do.
A little bit, and that's the quote that Nick said from Steve Jobs is Blu-ray's a bag of hurt. The extra copy protection on it, the extra licensing restrictions on it, so for Apple to put a Blu-ray player in their computers would cost them a lot more because Sony was asking for exorbitant licensing fees. So what Apple did is they just took all optical drives out of their computers completely.
Right.
So they don't have to pay any license. Same thing with DVD. There had to be a license to the MPEG LA authority to decompress DVDs. But we're sort of seeing that in a lot of new computers now that they're not coming with optical drives at all because so much is downloadable from the internet. But just like we did with CDs, 15 years ago now, rip them into the computer to play. You can do the same thing with DVD and Blu-ray. You can do, but it's a little bit harder because of the different copy protections built into Blu-ray.
Right.
It's a lot more data too.
Yeah, typical Blu-ray disc
data,
is a lot
yeah.
more data. That's how it gets high definition movies.
Right.
Yeah, typical DVD is about 4 gigabytes per side. And then you can do the double layer discs are about 8 gigs. And then Blu-ray started at 25 gigs, and then they pushed it to 50 gigs, and now we're hearing about 100 gig Blu-ray disc per side. So you might remember some of the early discs where you had to flip over and play the rest of the movie on the second side. But, you know, 100 gigs per disc, you can allow for much higher quality movies to get that high def. Although we have heard that some of the real big movies, what was it, the last Transformers movie was over a terabyte for the single movie.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
And that's kind of a thing we're hearing from the movie theaters. A lot of theaters have gone to digital projection, so they get one hard drive with the movie on it instead of a pallet of film with, you know, several miles of film to feed through to actually show the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, Blu-rays might become more popular as a backup medium, and but
right.
my experience has been, you know, once you burn those discs, there tend to be a lot more errors than something like a tape drive or especially a hard drive. So I just, and the capacity, you know, hasn't kept up, you know, with hard drives. So I just
yeah,
and
keep
now
backing
with,
up the hard drive.
Right, and now with cloud storage, it's another thing you don't need, and cloud storage is better anyway since you end up with your data not in your house. So if, God forbid, your house burns down, your data aren't lost.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, at the same time, though, I can't see the physical formats going away completely. You know, I think people still want to, like, buy a movie. So I'm wondering if Blu-ray does go away, will they replace it with something else? Or, you know,
right.
Yeah.
And the
well,
big thing,
we're seeing that in audio, that vinyl record albums are making a comeback, especially with audiophiles, because it's a richer sound. Rather than, you know, a CD is sampled at 44,000 times per second. That's not enough for
it's
some people.
It's not nearly enough.
Yeah.
They did a study and they discovered that teenagers these days
yeah.
actually prefer the sound of MP3s.
Right. We've grown
to
up.
To the live, you know, in a live environment.
And there's sort of two problems there. Cause,
too much overtone.
Well, we've grown up with listening to MP3s. So a whole generation has grown up listening to crappy compression on an MP3. And there's so much studio work involved in an album that they can't do it when they're playing live.
Yep. Although, I'll tell you what, I think that the DVD, Blu-ray situation, they're going to live for a long time for those of us who love the extras. You know,
yeah.
getting those blooper reels and the alternate endings and the director's track and everything else. That's a big piece for those of us who are real real cinema files.
And iTunes does do that. A lot of the iTunes movies that you buy in the iTunes store do have that extras feature available. So that's kind of what you see in the physical stores, where you got, you know, the $20 disc is just the movie, then you got the $30 disc that has the extras, and then there's the $40 super disc that will have everything. So a lot of them will have the standard DVD, the Blu-ray disc, and the digital copy pre-ripped for you, basically.
Right.
In the actual physical disc box. Right.
My daughter loves that because she's got a MacBook Air, and it's a lot easier for her to use the digital copy than it is to use the DVD, because she doesn't have one.
Yeah, there's no physical drive on most of the Macs anymore, and a lot of the Windows PCs are not coming with physical discs anymore either.
Right.
And it always struck us as odd that some of the PC companies put a Blu-ray disc in your computer. The whole point of high definition Blu-ray is your big screen TV looks good. They used to say that when you went to from VHS to DVD, you needed about a 40-inch screen to notice the quality improvement. And then when you go to Blu-ray, you need like a 55, 60-inch TV to notice the quality improvement.
Yep.
So putting it on your 13-inch laptop seemed to be ridiculous.
Yeah, my daughter's old phone had an HDMI plug on it. And so back then, of course, we still had unlimited data. And so when she first got to college and they didn't have internet in her dorm, they didn't have cable hooked up in her dorm, she got on the Netflix account and she would hook her phone to her television and play her movies that way.
Yeah.
And I always thought, holy moly, but it worked.
But one of the most common...
Yeah, now YouTube has the HD plus definition.
Right. And some of them maybe even have
4K.
Yep, a 4K video.
Yep.
You need, a 70-inch TV.
Right.
And it's the high frame rate. Did you see The Hobbit in high frame rate?
Yeah.
A lot of people complained, standard movie frame rate is 24 frames per second. So there were versions of The Hobbit that were available at 48 frames per second. It looked too real, was the usual complaint. It looked like a window and not a movie. Because it looked too
real.
Oh, yeah,
the TVs have that motion compensation feature. And, I still have an older TV here. When I go to someone's house and watch one of those HD movies, it drives you crazy because it looks weird.
Yeah, yeah. But, it comes back around to the reality is that as time goes on, if they start putting data caps on our internet connections, like the hardwired connection, whether you're a DSL or cable or fiber, if they start putting data caps on that, you won't be able to watch any of that stuff anymore. And we may find that we go back to Blu-ray simply because we can't get our movies any other way.
Yep.
Netflix starts making special deals where the cap doesn't count towards certain companies' movies and others.
Well, and that's almost a disturbing trend. Is that Comcast demanded payment from Netflix, and so Netflix is paying Comcast to distribute content to Comcast customers, and so Comcast is getting paid twice. They're getting paid by their customer to have Comcast television, and they're getting paid by Netflix to have Comcast internet. And so now AT&T is wanting money from Comcast, and from Netflix. And that sort of bodes ill against the same thing happening to Hulu and other content providers and other internet providers, which end up, probably just raising the price of your internet service yourself.
That's why you need to write to your senator and Congress critters and tell them we want net neutrality, real net neutrality. When Obama was running for president, he promised us net neutrality, and now he's hired the guy who used to lobby against net neutrality to be the head of the FCC, so net neutrality is clearly going away. There's already a bill out there to do that. And you need to write to your Congress critters and tell them we want net neutrality and hold them accountable.
Especially when third world countries can have faster and cheaper service than us.
Yeah.
That's pretty pathetic.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in our government, all of it up and down the line. Democrats, Republicans, Tea Partiers, everybody for that. It's
yeah, that was a surprising turn to the FCC because they were fighting for net neutrality. Then the one court said they couldn't do it because of the way ISPs were defined, and then all of a sudden they seem to reverse and come out with that rule that companies can buy faster lanes,
right?
Stuff like that.
Right. No, I get it. Listen, we need to take a break. Thank you.
Yeah.
Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we've got Bob, who better not be driving while he's calling from his car. Bob?
No, I'm stationary on the side of the road. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, good. Go for it.
Okay. I've got a two-year-old Dell XPS laptop, a very high-end one, 8 gig of RAM, 1080p monitor, etc. It works great. Except here's my problem. It has a built-in Dell webcam, and if I go on to, like, Dell Webcam Central to just, you know, look at myself, or if I just immediately go into, say, Skype and bring up and check, you know, the video.
Sure.
So I can see myself, maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds, or 1 minute, it freezes, okay? And then it will not come back on. If I turn the computer off, not restart, turn it off and start up again, then I can see myself. But, again, it freezes. I've installed and uninstalled the drivers a million times, you know, and in terms of Dell Webcam Central, I've installed and reinstalled many times the, you know, the Dell Webcam Central, but this still happens. It's out of warranty. What do you suggest?
And this is running on XP, you said?
No, Windows 7.
Oh, there you go. All right. The first thing I would do, honestly, is I would dance the security tango. There are some viruses that take over your monitor, your webcam, and I would make sure that one of those isn't conflicting with anything. So dance the security tango and make sure your system is clean.
Okay, now one thing I do, if I go Control-Alt-Delete and go into processes, it may only show that, like, AOL is on. I have nothing else running on the system.
No. See.
Right. There could be a rootkit that could be hiding. Rootkits don't sit there and show themselves in the processes.
Many viruses
don't. And you don't have the all processes showing. So there are hundreds of programs running on your PC that don't show themselves in the list.
Right. So the first thing I would do is dance the tango.
Okay.
At securitytango.com and make sure that your system is clean. The second thing I would do is stop AOL.
Yeah, I've done that, and still happens.
Does it happen in other video programs like Skype or one of the messaging programs?
Yes, well, it happens in Skype. And, sometimes, if I restart the computer, I don't open up the Webcam Central and go into Skype and go into, the one thing under, checking the video cam. It brings it up, I'll see it, and then after a while it will freeze.
Yeah, I would suggest you've got one of several problems. It could be a virus.
Okay.
It could be a bad driver. I would check with Dell Webcam Central and make sure you've got the latest.
I do. I mean, I've done it. The drivers, if you delete them, it automatically loads it from it restarts from someplace on my hard drive.
Right, but if that one was not right,
yeah,
then you're just constantly reloading a bad driver. What you want to do is see if there's a newer driver for your specific model of laptop.
From the Dell website.
From the Dell website. And if there is, install that one. Follow their directions to install that one.
This is the latest that I've got, the latest one.
From Dell?
Yeah.
Okay.
You might want to download it again just to be safe. It might have been a bad download. At one point.
Right.
I've done that, too.
That's a possibility. All right. Well, then I would start with the security tango and make sure that everything else is stopped. You know, there's a lot of software that loads in the background. HP loads a million things in the background if you've got their drivers. AOL loads a million things in the background, not just their startup program. Make sure all of those are gone. Maybe you wanna boot up in safe mode and see if the camera works then. That will tell you actually immediately whether the issue is something that runs in the background. Well, after you do the security tango, because viruses will still work, obviously, in safe mode. That's the security tango. Then boot in. Sorry, go ahead.
Say it could be a rootkit.
Yes, it could be a rootkit.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Yeah, it could be. But I would start with, it may not be, don't borrow trouble you don't have. So start with dancing the security tango. If that doesn't do it itself, then boot into safe mode and see if it works. That will tell you it's something it loads during the standard boot up process. Then you can go into... what is it? MS config, and on the startup tab, start turning things off and trying it, and also in the startup folder under on the start button on the system itself.
I've almost forgotten how to start the computer in safe mode.
You bang the F8 key.
Yeah, just keep hitting the F8 key. It'll come up
between the computer manufacturer logo and before the Microsoft logo.
Yeah, when it starts up, just keep hitting the F8 key and then you'll get the menu to go.
Don't hold it down. That doesn't work quite the same way. Keep tapping it.
Yeah. Keep tapping it. It'll get its attention. That's what you're trying to do. Get the attention and then it'll present you with the menu to go into safe mode or safe mode with networking.
Okay, I thank you guys very much. I enjoy your show whenever I can catch it.
Sure.
Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
Another thing he could possibly try is if he has one or knows a friend with one is another camera. Try an external USB camera.
Right.
Maybe he has a hardware fault in his camera. And now that it's out of warranty, it's too late, but it's something to try at least.
Right, but if he has a friend with an external camera, then he'll know whether or not he has to go buy one.
Right, and a lot of cameras, external cameras have a little hooky thing that just hangs on the top of your laptop screen.
Right.
Where the cameras are now, that's how we did it before there were cameras put in. Or little posts like the camera I've got in here, a little stand-up post that you would stick to your monitor or sit on the counter to hold the camera.
Right. Well, I may have to try an external camera. There's an interesting thought. Maybe that – no, see, but that still has its own internal microphone. It's still going to work the same way. All right, it's not going to help me. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I got a comment about the whole Blu-ray thing.
And, yeah.
You know, it goes back to, you know, the late 90s with the CDs. And, you know, I don't know if people remember, but they were charging upwards of over $20 for a CD.
Sure.
Back before this whole MP3 craze came in. And, you know, we were really getting fleeced. And I think the MP3... part of it was people fighting back. You know, we're sick and tired of paying $20 and $22 for a CD, and you know they've increased it to where there's 18-20 songs on them, and half of those 18 or 20 songs were terrible.
Yeah, it's only
oh yeah,
one
no
good
question.
Song, yeah.
You know, they were feeding us a lot of junk and making us pay a lot of money for it, and you know that corporate greed always drives them, and then when it breaks, they want to sue the consumer.
Right.
Yep.
Well,
and even though it's not right to steal their content, you know, people feel like they're getting ripped off.
Back in my day, and I'm probably much older than you are, when I bought an album, you know, there may have been 13, 14, 15 songs on it, but 12 or 13 or 14 of them were great songs.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they flowed from one to the next. That's why a lot of...
And they were concept albums.
Right. A lot of bands still won't sell their music online because they don't want to sell a single. They don't make singles. They make albums. It's an hour of one song, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Going
back to that, 45s.
Yeah.
You remember buying a 45 and you bought it and it was the hit and then you listened to the B-side and you were like... this is a good song, too.
Yep.
And before you know it, that B-side was the next single.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the interesting things there is that the 45 was a competitor to the 33. They were two competing standards that were being pushed at once, and the 33 got picked for the long playing. You know, it's an LP, and the 45 got picked for the single, a lot like Beta versus VHS. VHS tapes could store 6 hours, where Beta was only 4.5. Even though Beta was higher quality, VHS won. And going back to movie rental days, if anyone remembers that far back, you know, when a movie came out on video cassette, it was $100 or more. Because it was bought by a rental store who might rent it 10 or 20 times.
Right.
And then when they started coming out for $30, $40 as a sell-through price, that was cheap. And we started buying our own, you know, VHS tapes. And then that led to the demise of the video rental store.
Right, which I miss. You know, I mean, you know, in order to get Netflix, you know, you got to pay one price to download. You got to pay a separate price for the DVD or Blu-ray rental or the combo price, and it's affordable, but it's still expensive. You know, especially if we get data caps.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. You know, we see it now in the phones, and we're going to see it on our land connections. It's the dichotomy between, use this to listen to all your music and watch all your videos and chat with your friends and do this and do that and the other thing. And the carriers are all saying yes, but you're going to pay through the nose to do all that stuff. And if it hits our landlines, then, you know, there's going to be a lot of complaint from companies that are predicated on you having a lot of content, on you downloading a lot of content, streaming a lot of content. For example, there are websites that I already have earmarked that I will never go to again because they autoplay ads. If I'm
right.
paying by the megabyte for my data, I'm never going to go to those sites, ever.
There are a couple of tricks in your settings where you can disable that autoplay, but it's tricky and you can't find it all.
I'm just not going to go. I'm not going to be bothered. I don't want to mess up and start paying to watch ads. And the same thing is going to be true on YouTube. If I'm watching a bunch of YouTubes, I may be willing to pay for that, but am I going to want to pay for a 30-second ad in front of all of them? Because I will be paying for that download.
And what's annoying is sometimes it's a 60-second ad for a 30-second video.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and again, as long as it's a free download, then okay, I guess, you know, whatever, whatever. But if I'm suddenly paying because I've got a data cap, I don't want that 30-second ad to be part of... part of my data. I just don't want it.
Right. So I use my Netflix account a lot of times when you know it's a movie that maybe they just put on Netflix, and I will check it out, and if I like it and it's something I want to keep, I go buy it. You know,
but you're rare. Most people don't anymore.
That I want to keep in my collection. I have a collection. You know.
So do I, but we're rare. Most people don't.
And it's also kids, because the kids will watch the same movie 100 times. So that one I want to buy, not rent 100 times.
Exactly. So. You don't want to sit there and have to, you know, stream it, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. You know?
Right. Right now it's not a big deal, but if there are caps.
Right. Yep. Right.
We could see a resurgence of Blu-ray simply for that reason.
And plus, if you've got a couple kids and one's streaming and the other one's on YouTube and you're trying to get something done, all of a sudden you're at a crawl trying to get your work done on your computer.
Yep.
Because your data is getting, you know, divided up four ways, you know.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm still a physical disc guy. I buy less CDs than I used to, but that's because I'm picky in what I'll buy. I will preview it and see how much I like. That's what I use YouTube for.
Yeah.
Everybody puts the music on there, and I'll say, I like this. I'm going to go buy it. Or, you know, I won't go buy it because I don't like what they're putting on it.
Well, you know what? God bless you, but you're rare, Mark. Most people
are. Very rare. You're in the exception, not the rule.
The liner notes in the album, and I love the gatefolds of albums, and that's what I miss from albums to CDs. of all the artwork, but I love the convenience of a CD.
Well, I'm proud to say that I raised my daughter right.
My MP3 player, you know.
I'm proud to say I raised my daughter right because she's a CD gal. She likes the liner notes and all that stuff you were talking about.
Now, good for you, because that's what I grew up with.
So that was,
and I loved album art. That was my favorite thing. You know?
Sat in the Barca Lounger, you put on the giant headphones, you played the album and read the liner notes.
Yep. With a pair of headphones on.
Yep.
All right, we got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. The Android Silver Project, which was rumored earlier. Did we have somebody on the line? Oh, all right, well, then I'll read this. The Android Silver Project, which was rumored earlier this month, has been corroborated by four fresh sources, all of whom point to a major shift in Google's mobile strategy. The information reports that the current scheme of offering Nexus-branded headsets with Google's unaltered vision of the best Android user experience will be scrapped to be replaced by a set of high-end silver phones that will closely adhere to it. The change is both expensive and expansive, as Google is said to be planning to spend heavily on promoting these devices in wireless carrier stores and through advertising, essentially subsidizing the development and marketing costs for its hardware partners. In exchange for this new contribution, Google will gain tighter control of the software shipping in the selected phones. The promise is that the company will clean up third-party bloatware, ensure prompt and reliable software updates, and introduce a real standard and consistency to the user experience across Android Silver devices. LG and Motorola are identified as the likeliest candidates for taking part, with the first phones anticipated as soon as next year, while Samsung, HTC, and Sony might need a little bit more convincing. Then again, all three of the latter companies have already offered Google Play editions of their leading phones, which might be closest analog we have to the moment for what's Android Silver will look and act like. This may also be, although I'm sure it's been in the works for quite a while, this may also be a reaction to the fact that Amazon has just come out with their first phone, which has the which is based on Android, but has absolutely no Google thing in it at all.
No,
it doesn't use the Google. Well, it doesn't use the Google Play Store. It doesn't do Google search. Doesn't Google anything. So Google gets no benefit from it under any circumstances. So we'll see what that Android Silver experience looked like as time goes on. Back to the phones. What?
I'm saying on the Android Silver website, there's an ad for Wolfenstein: The New Order. There's a new Wolfenstein coming.
Nice. Back to the phones. Dennis from Rochester. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Hi. This question is for Steve. You guys were talking about the switch on the iPhone, I think, a little while back,
right,
which reminded me that I have a new iPhone 4S ordered in December, when I don't use the lock unlock, I mean, I don't have a code to unlock it, but if I push the button on the top and I just get the screen, I don't know what that's called, the lock screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the home screen.
Right.
The time on it, is different sometimes, not always, when I slide and get my icons on the.
You mean between sliding and getting your icons?
Yes.
How different?
Could be a half hour, depending on how long I've had the phone, not using the phone.
So the phone's asleep, the timer stopped. So you wake the phone up, it shows you the last time it was used, and then and within a second or two, it updates the time.
Is that the way it's supposed to work?
No, and I'm finding reports of timer lock bugs like that. What OS are you running?
Well, I just downloaded to OS 7.1.1 today, so I don't know if maybe that'll solve the problem or not.
It may. The other thing to check is to make sure you've got the right time zone set in the settings. So it's an Eastern time zone.
I did check on that, and I know I'm okay there.
Okay.
Is there anything else?
I am seeing a couple of things where they say it is a bug in the iOS 7.
Okay. Is there anybody I can report that to?
What is it? Apple.com/feedback? And see, it may be fixed in the 7.1.1 update.
Yeah, because I downloaded the 7.1.1 today, I really don't know if that's going to continue to happen, but it really was not good, because when I'm on the road doing a job and I got to record my time on a sheet,
yeah,
I just click the thing and it's giving me the wrong time. In trouble. So, okay, so I'll watch for that, and then I'll also go to feedback just in case, and thank you very much.
Yep.
Well, check to make sure that it's fixed in 7.1 first, because if it is, there's no point in putting in the feedback.
Okay, good point.
Yep.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Okay.
Because that might have been part, because remember there was the lock screen bug, that if it was locked, people could get into your contacts and your calendars.
Right.
So it might have been part of that, that the lock screen wasn't updating properly when it needed to be.
Yeah, it might. And theoretically, that's all fixed, right?
Yeah.
So that may be it. All right, back to the phones. We've got just a couple of minutes to talk to George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's up?
Got a question based upon what I just heard from a caller a couple steps earlier. He made mention of a home theater PC, I think he called it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't heard of that before. What is that?
It's essentially a PC that takes the place of your DVR. And you buy a PC with a TV tuner card in it and plug your cable or whatever into that. And then you use that instead of your DVR to record and play back your shows.
And so are they sold under that name?
No, they have 100 different names.
But the general...
No, I mean, are they sold as that product line?
Yeah, the general name is Home Theater PC.
Is that right?
Yeah. Microsoft had a specific product called the Windows Media Center. And so they had that one called Media Center PC that had the TV tuner card in it. But we're seeing a lot of people now just using any computer plugged into their television and streaming video from the web, not needing to have broadcast television on it from a cable connection, and that's part of what we call cord cutting. And so you can have Netflix, you can have Hulu, you go to ABC.com and watch their shows, go to CBS.com, watch their shows, and not need to have broadcast television.
So do I buy this under a brand name such as HP or...
pretty much any of the PC brands will sell home theater PCs with a TV tuner card built into them.
Is that right?
Yep.
You may have to do a little bit of customization because they're not sold for our area. Right?
I see.
But so you have to, when you set it up, you tell it this is my cable provider and things like that. But so it's a little more work than just buying a DVR from your cable provider and plugging it in, but not a terrible amount more.
There's something called the cable card. So if you want to watch encrypted channels, basically anything above channel 100, then you need a cable card subscription from Time Warner. Mm-hmm. And that has to plug into a card slot on the back of the PC to give you that channel decryption.
Is that something extra from Time Warner?
Yes. You will still pay for that from Time Warner.
But it's cheaper than the DVR box, the full DVR service.
Oh, I see. Okay. I spent some time researching and finally tracked down this Win TV product from, I guess you pronounce it, Hopog.
Hopog, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I use that, but only for selected things that I really want to record, and actually I do that as a second step off from the set-top box.
Yeah, that's something you can add to an existing PC to make it a home theater PC.
Right, but I hadn't come across that term, home theater PC.
Right, but it does exist. There's if you're interested in rolling your own, there's a Linux distribution called MythTV, M-Y-T-H TV that, of course, now you got to do all the setup yourself, but it's designed specifically to be a home theater PC.
And we're almost seeing the concept of home theater PC dying off with the Apple TV box, the Amazon Fire box, the Google Chrome box, the Boxy box. There's a lot of set-top boxes already designed to do internet video content.
Right.
The big trick is if you want broadcast content, then you need the broadcast TV tuner in the PC.
Hey, guys, you've thrown a lot at me. Thank you very much.
Right. Sure. You might also want to take a look at Lenovo. They have something called the Idea Center. Yeah, Q190, I think, is the model number. But they all have some sort of home theater PC.
which is, it's kind of a neat idea. The biggest, as we talked about in the past, the biggest thing with cutting the cable TV cord and just using internet is not being able to watch live shows on broadcast. So one way around that is to get an antenna, and then you can get all the local TV channels to watch live stuff. Or two, we're already used to watching stuff on the DVR, so you don't watch things live anymore.
Right.
And so a lot of people are finding, in fact, I read a statistic that in the under 30 crowd, it's like 65% of people don't have cable television. In the over 50 crowd, it's almost 30%. So a lot of people are starting to not use cable television and just use an internet service. So you can use your DSL internet or your cable internet to watch video online.
Right, and until we get to the point where there are data caps on those lines, that'll be useful. But of course, the people who provide those connections, for most of them, they are also providing some form of like the cable companies also provide cable. So they will be unhappy with you if you are using a massive amount of data and not having their stuff. So it's we'll see where the battle takes us in the next year.
This one the guy that built a home theater PC out of a Raspberry Pi.
Nice. Now we're talking. Listen, we're done for another week. We want to thank each and every one of you called in. We want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. You should call earlier and more often next week. But we will be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Don't go away, though, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. And Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. Although, I don't know, Michael doesn't have a big enough cane, I think. He needs a bigger stick. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 55 minutes after the hour. On the longest-running computer show in the known universe, it's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.